good option is you are purchasing NCI, you are in progress of purchasing NCI. The purchase has not yet been made. And the second one is, then would there be a difference in treatment between being in progress of purchasing an NCI, well, the price that might change, and purchasing NCI, having purchased NCI with variable consideration, and how would you treat that variable consideration? And should there be differences?
Laurence, you were just saying there was a lack of guidance on measuring NCI. Isn't that more to do with sort of the subsequent measurement? Because we've got some guidance on measuring NCI in IFRS 3 in terms of fair value or share of carrying amount of net assets. I just wanted to clarify what it was that you felt there wasn't guidance. It is.
When you pay the additional cash,
yeah, I've got Ruth, Scott, Joanna.
What I'm concerned about is that we went through all of this discussion, the issues that Laurence has raised, the issues that Guido has raised, where does the debit go, does the NCI put give control or not give control, all of these questions we went through. And we spent months and months and meetings on this. And we couldn't come to a solution. We couldn't get to a solution. It seemed that the technical answer was yes, it's quite clear, it's a financial liability, it's measured through P&L, end of story. But we couldn't resolve the deeper issues, which are some of the issues that Laurence has raised, and with the fact that you seem to get a counterintuitive answer if you treated the put on a gross basis rather than on a net basis, which is why we made the recommendation to the board for the scope exemption. So I'm very concerned with how this has come back to the committee, because it seems to, I don't know if it's ignored all of that discussion, but it seems to have overlooked all of that and said, it's just a simple question, does the change go through P&L? Well, the IFRIC said yes, a couple of years ago it said yes, that's where it goes, but that didn't resolve the problem that we were trying to resolve. So I'm concerned that this has come back to the IFRIC in this form. It seems clear to me from the papers that the board knows what the answer is. The majority of board members have expressed a view in both situations. I don't know why it's coming back to us. It seems to me that the board can, if the board wants to, it can resolve the issue in this way, if it wants to. I don't think it will solve the issue, but it can give the answer, and I don't think it's necessary for the IFRIC to do that. Because all we would do is repeat what the papers say that the board members have already agreed. Well, if that's the case, let the board say that and take it off our agenda.
I think in fairness, Ruth, my recollection is last meeting the committee did say we want to take one more look at this and attempt to try and do something that would be useful. If the conclusion now is, well, we've looked at it and we don't think, as you argue, that's fine. We can put it back to the board on that basis.
Yeah, and I think, Ruth, also to add to what Wayne said, I think as staff we sort of share a bit of the same concern. I think if we'd pushed it at the board meeting last time, we probably could have got the board to vote on the decision and it wouldn't have come back to the committee at all. But they did ask for it to come back to the committee to give you the opportunity to have one last look. So really, I think from a staff perspective, the way that we thought we could try and balance a good use of your time with what this board had asked us to do was really to give you the opportunity to see whether there was any argument that we'd sort of missed in the analysis that on reflection you felt should be brought to the board's attention before they took a final view on it.
Well, the argument that we suggested, which was you need to look at the put in combination with the subsidiary's shares, which would allow for the net treatment of the put. I mean, that's what we came up with as the solution.
Which they didn't want to do.
That was our solution.
Scott?
Well, continuing I think along the same lines as some of the others. I think the arguments in the paper with regards to the question of where do changes in the measurement of the put go are complete as asked. Does the committee think that the analysis is complete? Yes, I think so. I think it leads us to where we were a year ago or so when we discussed it. I believe the guidance is clear that it says P&L. It produces counterintuitive results. We proposed one solution to try to resolve the counterintuitive results. The board doesn't like that. I don't have another solution that I can get from the discussion we could have out of this paper. The only other solution that comes to mind to be consistent with what I think the literature says regarding measurement of the put and where those changes go is to look at how we allocate earnings between the controlling and non-controlling interests, is because there is no guidance, or very little, on the continuing measurement of non-controlling interests. All that the guidance says is that you have to allocate the earnings of the subsidiary to the controlling and non-controlling interests. Might there be a solution to the difficult and counterintuitive accounting that says, yes, we have to account for the put under IAS 32 and 39, remeasurements go through P&L, but is there some way to take that into account when we allocate earnings of the subsidiary? We tried changing the measurement of the put. The board said no. The only other way, it seems to me, to resolve the counterintuitive accounting that a lot of people see is to try to change the way earnings are allocated between the controlling and non-controlling interests. But that would require a lot more discussion and a lot more information. Regarding the issue that's in front of us now, I'm in the same place that I was a year ago. The literature says P&L. I don't like it, but that's what it says. And the one solution we proposed so far, the board rejected.
We'll go Joanna, Andrew, and then back to Guido.
I am basically sharing the same concerns as Ruth. I mean, the paper says, you know, the simple question that they put back to us is, well, is it P&L and equity? Well, actually, that was the question that we had in the first place that we grappled with for over a year and came up with a solution. So I am, without getting into any of the technical discussion, I mean, we would, I believe, if we continued to do that, go round and come around with the same issues. If the board overall, if you like, as a preliminary view, set P&L, I'm perfectly happy to vote, if you like, on a pragmatic basis to say, yep, P&L seems sensible, without acknowledging all the issues around all the other things, and we haven't addressed this, that, and the other. That if what the board is looking for is for this committee to say, do we object wildly if they turn around and say it is P&L, then I would be in the camp that says I'm fine. I just think it's a waste of time of us trying to, or relitigating what we spent, as you rightly said, Liz, many months actually debating and couldn't reach, or we reached one solution which they rejected.
Andrew?
We did agree to give it one more shot, but picking up on Ruth's comments, I agree with those, and that if we can't get a quick consensus of direction around the table as to whether the answer's P&L or equity, which I think we should test today, then I agree we should not take it to another meeting. If it doesn't look as though we're going to get consensus and we're going to go through all the same old arguments again, I think we're going to have to accept diversity in practice. So be it, I guess. The one nervousness I have on that is that now this paper might potentially extend that diversity to forward contracts. And it would be good if we could avoid that, because that wasn't the issue first time around. So kicking it into touch, if we have to, you know, maybe okay from the NCI put perspective, but I'm nervous about broadening it out to forward contracts.
Liz, if test my memory, but wasn't one of the concern of one board member that he had seen in practice puts that were so far in the money that they were effectively forwards. Wasn't that his concern?
I'm not sure that he had necessarily actually seen them in practice, but that was his concern.
His concern was that they might exist then.
Yeah.
I've seen them in practice.
Okay.
Yeah. That might be the case, but I don't think we should deal with extreme backhands. We should just deal with the principles.
Guido? The reason why I asked the question is really that I think there might be a solution to our problem, because practice says there is, well, at least there is diversity in practice, because people say, well, if you look at IS 27, it tells you that transactions with NCI or with equity owners should not affect P&L. But when you really look at paragraph 30 in 27, it says that changes in parents' ownership interests do not result in loss of control or common force equity transactions. And I think, and maybe I think I understood Laurence also in that way, that before the transfer of shares actually took place, there is no such change in parents' ownership interest. Because the NCI owners are still entitled to dividends, they still can vote. They are probably still entitled to a proportionate share if the company is liquidated. So then if you look at IS 32, it just tells you that the debit goes to equity and not to NCI. So also the board doesn't really say the transaction already occurred, just put the debit into equity, not into NCI. So you don't de-recognize necessarily NCI. And we all know there's also diversity in practice out there because people don't know where the debit goes in equity. But it definitely doesn't say to NCI. So if we go that route and say, well, the transaction has not occurred yet when you write such a put, it only occurs when the put is exercised, then at least we have kind of a solution where we can come up with saying, well, yeah, then changes to liability go through P&L because the transaction has not already occurred. The transaction only occurs later on when the liability is de-recognized and when the shares are actually transferred. So that would be, I agree, I'm also with alternative one, saying, well, it should go through P&L, but I think we need to have a reason, just voting on it and saying, well, we think it should go through P&L, then we don't solve the
so concept. You'd be arguing that there is really no real conflict with IS 27 because there hasn't been a change in the ownership.
Right.
Yes.
I have to admit, when you first introduced the question, I didn't understand. But when you're referring to the transaction, you're talking about the transaction with equity holders.
Right.
And then the Sue would say there's no conflict there. Once that happens, we know how to deal with that. It's the derivative and the funny way that we account for this particular derivative that's the problem.
Yes. Because the remeasurement isn't really what 27 is talking about. It's talking about the actual change of control when the put's exercised, if you like.
Yeah. Well, that would, it seems to me, be a clarification if we articulated that and said that the way you read the literature is that you read 32 until this happens, and then you read the consolidation literature. Would that be a useful thing, and should we just put that back to the board and tell them to do it? That is the consensus of this group, that's the way you read the literature, but Laurence?
I cannot support it because I cannot support the outcome of what is being said. I don't think this would be improving financial reporting.
Well, that may or may not be, but the question for us, I think, is what does the literature say? What you'd say is that the board should change the accounting. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm saying that I love that this has been read that way for the types of transactions. I would like that the staff would research all the types of transactions and how whether this has been treated consistently. particularly, for example, can think of it seems to me to recall those cases when we have a foreign currency translation effects and so on, for partial disposals and so on, and whether it goes to P&L or not, whether you would be recycling or not. Going that route would have nocturnal effect on various other types of transactions. So before going straight ahead, I think it needs to be looked at carefully.
Scott?
I would be fine with making that clarification if that's, you know, something that people think would be helpful. I think the situation we're in right now with practice is that there's diversity, and even though I don't particularly like the gross-up accounting for the put, that's what's in the literature, and I think we're best to get rid of the diversity if we can. If that would help, if this clarification would help, I'm happy to do it, although it rather strikes me as another argument that those in favor of view A might put forth. You know, we have six or seven that are already in this paper. Guido's is another one that could be put in that column. I'm not sure it's any more persuasive than any of the others, but if it's a clarification that will help practice, I'm certainly amenable to it.
How would you articulate this, Liz?
I think what I would do is perhaps add a paragraph to the application guidance of IS 27 and the IFRS 10 that clarifies that paragraph 30 in IS 27 and the equivalent in IFRS 10 does not apply to NCI puts because the transaction with the non-controlling interest shareholder or the exchange of shares has not occurred. Somehow clarify that particular paragraph does not apply to these transactions because the actual exchange has not happened.
Well, because the change in the ownership interest hasn't happened. That's the words in paragraph 30,
yep.
Changes in the ownership interest.
That's the same as in your staff analysis paragraph, what, 16C?
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly the point I was trying to make.
That's the same.
Yeah.
And I suppose the focus being on the characteristics of ownership, not necessarily a legal exchange of documents. It's more to do with the substance. Have you got the rights of ownership?
Right.
And when you've got the rights of ownership, that's when it's changed.
Yeah, which is helpful, I think, because the tension at the moment is that because of the treatment in 32, the question is, does that mean that we think it's gone away or the ownership change has already occurred? So that, I think, would be a helpful clarification.
Okay, now to Sue, do you think that's something that the board needs to do? That's a clarification that they need to make? Or is that something that we...
I'm not sure. I think it is. The nature feels almost, it feels more interpretation-like to me, but it is a change to the application guidance. I think it would be good to have it in the body of the actual standard, I think. So maybe it could be a recommendation from this committee for a change to be made,
yeah,
by the board.
Yeah, that was what I was driving toward. I'm sorry.
I think that might be a good approach.
To the extent that I am incoherent today, blame it on cold medication. Okay, let's get Laurence in and then let me see if I can parse the issue.
Question. Is the clarification, in fact, to say that any transaction with NCI that does not result in a change in a parent's ownership interest in a subsidiary should not be accounted for in equity?
Sure sounds like it to me.
I think so.
Yes, unless there's some other standard that requires or permits it to be in equity.
speak. Yes.
Okay. But so I think we need to think through. But as I said, no consequences.
My only hesitation was that the board asked that the clarification be really in relation to NCI puts or forwards. So that's my only hesitation in responding off the cuff to that.
And I mean, I think all the clarification has to say is that the issuance of an NCI put is not a transaction that changes the ownership interest as discussed in paragraph 35 AS 27.
Peter?
Yeah, I think it's all about present ownership interest. That's, I think, the wording in 27. Also, when you look at potential voting rights, to say take that into consideration when it's controlled, but when you really consolidate, go back to the present ownership interest.
Right.
But if you would change it, or if you would clarify, sorry, if you would clarify paragraph 30, that would mean that also for forwards, that would not be a transaction with the NCI if you're signing a forward contract, only right. if shares are really transferred.
Yep. Andrew?
I don't think I have a problem with where this is going. In fact, it seems quite a good idea. I guess I'm just thinking through the debit side. If we clarify that there's been no change in ownership, then at the moment I think sometimes the debit is taken to equity and sometimes the NCI is derecognized. So would that mean, would the knock-on effect, the logical knock-on effect mean that you shouldn't derecognize the NCI? I'm not saying I have a problem with that, I just think we should think it through that.
Yeah, which we weren't really asked to answer, so I wonder, and the other thing that's just sort of causing me to hesitate a little bit, given that we've sort of come up with this on the run in the meeting, is I just would like to make sure that there's sort of no knock-on consequences to the consolidation analysis and other things, so I think we just need to think through that thoroughly. But in concept, I think maybe the board, we weren't asked to clarify where the debit went to. We've really been asked to clarify where the changes in the measurement go to. So I think my preference would probably be to limit its effect to the 27 answer rather than the 32 debit question.
Yeah, I mean, there's no guidance on where the debit goes at the moment, and I guess we're proposing that we wouldn't start adding guidance at this stage.
Yeah, that.
Well, Scott, then Laurence, then Ruth.
Yeah, I was thinking about the same issue that Andrew brought up, but I didn't think that this necessarily answered that question. Although I do acknowledge that some could certainly read it that way and say if there hasn't been a transaction with the NCI, then how should we, you know, why should we make an entry to the non-controlling interest? But I think what we're saying is there hasn't been a change in the ownership interest. If you pay a dividend to the non-controlling interest shareholders, certainly you're going to reduce the NCI balance, even though there hasn't been a change in ownership interests. This could be looked at along the same lines as that kind of transaction. So I don't think it necessarily answers that question.
Well, I think I said Laurence and then Ruth.
Yeah, I would really like that we look through the principle that I just raised. I mean, the dividend case that Scott is just raising, effectively it goes against NCI, but NCI is part of equity. Please remember, NCI is equity. I was thinking of a case of you issue warrants, you receive a premium for it. What do you do? What do you do with a premium? Usually we would have put the premium against equity. What would you do over here? Because there is no change in equity, no change in ownership. What do you do with the premium?
Well, I think it's equity.
The premium. So if you're paid to issue the put?
Or the proceeds from issuing warrants. Or
so a debit cash, credit NCI put,
I think.
Yeah, and then the second.
I think that actually absolves us of needing to figure out whether there's a debit to equity or not for that piece.
I just want that to do things through a various pieces.
Yeah, we definitely need to do that. But I think that the idea would be to try and have as little impact on 32 as we can and to clarify the issue in 27, which is where the question came from in the first place.
Ruth?
Yeah, my concern with this as a quick fix on the run is that I think if you go back and have a look at the staff papers that led up to that March decision, there was quite a big discussion about when you do and don't de-recognise the NCI. And it depended on the substance of the put and the terms and conditions of the put. And that's what's worrying me, is that if we simply write a statement in IS 27 that says it never affects equity, I'm just worried that we haven't gone back and had a look at the thinking that was done then about circumstances where we agreed that it did affect equity and where you would de-recognise, well, where you would de-recognise NCI, so effectively you would affect equity. So I'm quite hesitant to make a recommendation now on the run without going back and having a look at that and seeing the case where we made the distinction, and I think we agreed on the distinction between those two cases where you would or you wouldn't de-recognise.
Who's flashing? Oh, Joanna.
Given the concerns and given where we've got to, and obviously the work hasn't been done, I wonder, and given that it's got to go to the board as well, I wonder whether this committee can make a recommendation that's subject to staff reviewing our previous papers that we've had and the principal issues that Laurence has talked about, that this seems an appropriate solution for the board to consider from this committee, and that therefore we don't, it doesn't come back to us anymore, but if the board, sorry, and I'm not trying to get it out of it coming back to us, but in terms of time, but if the staff thinks that this works, then they take it straight to the board as a recommendation from us, but it is very much on the basis that you do the work to make sure it does work with, you know, acknowledging our concerns.
Okay, I'll take that as a motion. Subject to the staff satisfying itself that the concerns raised by Ruth and Laurence have been adequately addressed. We take this directly to the board as a recommendation for, I think, Sue, as you put it, an amendment in the consolidation literature, not so much to 32. Are there any objections to that?
No objections, just clarifications. That means
we never see it again, or we see the staff's analysis.
Which would you prefer?
My sense of the committee was that that if you never saw this again, it would be too soon. So,
that's not
right. Unless we find a strong reason, I wouldn't expect this to come back to you. Laurence.
As I said earlier, my objection is on the outcome where this is leading to, which I have difficulty accepting, because I don't think this would be improving financial reporting.
And I understand that. The difficulty we have is that, my personal view, the improvement in financial reporting involves fixing the fundamental approach that 32 takes, essentially the Leisenring dissent. And the board has shown no desire to go that way. So we either limit diversity, this approach, or allow the diversity to continue. I don't see any other options for us. I guess I can understand where you're coming from, but I don't see any other options open to us. Okay, noting Laurence's objection, do I see any others? That's the way we will go. If we need to bring it back to you, we will. But I would not expect that we would. Okay, Patrick, you're up.
Good morning,